Hello, my name is Caleb Ferguson. I'm a first-year DMA student in vocal performance at the University of Alabama. Today I will be talking with Dr. Paul Hoteling, who's a music professor, coordinator of the voice area, and director of the University of Alabama Opera Theater.
So why these two operas exactly? Why? What is the choice here?
To be perfectly honest, because they're short, and because they're American, because I wanted to collaborate with Dr. Adams. And knowing that we would have just done the Magic Flute, which would be much longer, and I foresaw the logistics of rehearsals, and I thought these are two perfect pieces, and because they're linked. I don't really like the word sequel, and I don't think that Marc Adamo does either, but there's so much material that's they're two characters that come directly from A Hand of Bridge. So I suppose you could call it a sequel, maybe a generation later, now that a young son who is not a part of A Hand of Bridge but is referenced, my football son and my stock market husband. Later on, we don't know what happened to the wife, but we know that David, the stock market husband, is now dead, and he appears in A Vow as a ghost, where the son, who has just grown up with this dysfunction of his parents, now is having his own dysfunction on his wedding day of all days, cold feet, really, really very interesting. And so that's why I picked them. We had done them before, paired together, and it's a very, very nice pairing. We did it just 3.5 years ago with Dr. Harris conducting, although he didn't do Hand of Bridge, he did A Vow. And because I wanted to create some opportunity, because some of the people that are moving on had missed some things last spring with the hit of COVID and the shutdown, and we didn't do a heck of a lot, as you know, in the fall. So I thought this created a little bit more of opportunity, and it was win-win. The chance to collaborate with Dr. Adams, the chance to do these really, really cool and important pieces. And I knew I could do them easily and logistically. And I wanted to give Dr. Bunn something to dig her teeth into, because she's new. I wanted her to have something to direct. So all those things swirled around together, and it was a very easy decision to do these two pieces.
Kind of going in, taking from being in the last performance of Die Saperflute, I saw how much care you took in rehearsals and reminding us about always taking care of ourselves, always social distancing and masking. And even when on stage it's so easy, you want to be close to your other cast members and just kind of very calmly reminding us, hey, maybe it's, you know, 6 feet apart. You know, I really appreciated the care that you took in that.
Well, thank you. I think it's important, because none of us know, you know, enough about this, but we know what we've been told. So practice with masks and social distancing and all that. So it was a crucial part of the process. And then, as you know, in Magic Flute, we folded it into the actual plot. And it was important to me to make everybody safe, you know, including me, everybody.
Yes, sir. And seeing the rehearsal process of Die Saperflute and being there, and obviously we can go into the obstacles of doing that, but even now with doing a second production, has anything changed in your rehearsal process? Is it basically the same?
It's the same. The works are so short that we're able to work on it for a half an hour, which means we can run it twice and then clear the air room. Same thing. Always thinking about air movement and singing with masks and being distant. The music stands are 6 feet apart in the set for Hand of Bridge, of course, which is indicated just to be four people sitting around a card table. That's too close. As you and I are sitting here right now, we're 6 feet apart. So you'll see what Dr. Bunn is doing. Everybody has their own little individual card table, and it's going to work just fine. Little abstract, it's going to work just fine. So I know the process didn't change. The number one priority is always the safety and comfort of everybody in the room. But because these works are shorter, it makes it a lot easier. You can do a complete run of the work, take a break, do it again, and then take a bigger break and clear the air out.
Yes, sir. You basically touched on what my next topic, or my next question was since The Hand of Bridge, when I think of playing cards, when I grew up playing cards with family or friends, sitting around a little table and playing that. And so I really was wondering, you know, how are they going to take that aspect of still sitting around an area,
right,
but making sure we follow precautions of COVID?
Yeah, it works really well. And the other piece, nobody has to be near each other at all. Both these pieces are really, to be perfectly frank, now that I've done it, you can stage anything and be socially distanced. I said on a panel recently that you could take one of the greatest love duets of all time and it still could be sexy and beautiful, and they could be 6 feet apart. You know, we associate intimacy with closeness or touching, but it doesn't have to be that way. You can do it with expression, with body energy, with presence, with a reach. So these pieces lend themselves to socially distanced, and I think any piece really can, with a little thought and a little care. So they're not sitting around a card table, but you know, and they're not necessarily seeing each other's hands, but we'll just make it work.
Yes, sir. So, as the assistant director and working
producer, I like the term producer. Producer.
Yeah. As a producer and working with Dr. Bunn, what is kind of y'all's vision? And try not to obviously speak for Dr. Bunn, but as a vision for this production that the audience to get out of this.
That's a good question. I mean, I think there really isn't a vision. We're playing Dr. Buntle's stage, and the way we sort of conceived it together is very straightforward, you know. Anna Bridge is a 1950s work. Avow is a work of the 90s. So they're contemporary 50s, 90s, you know. And we're just playing them for authenticity, telling these short, simple stories very much about relationships. Two dysfunctional relationships in Anna Bridge, and I think everybody can relate to that. Trying to be as authentic and honest as we can with these four characters, two men, two women, and then looking ahead at what dysfunction can do. These two couples, and imagine being their child. Well, we're going to find out, because now that kid grew up, football son, is going to grow up, and it's interesting that nobody has a name in Avow. It's the groom, the bride, the mother, the ghost, the priest, the celebrant. So, Now we just sort of fast forward and look at how the product of one of those relationships came forward. And again, playing it with honesty and authenticity, the texts of both are terrific. You don't need to do anything, you don't need to interpret the words, you need to figure out, look up some of the phrases in Hand of Bridge. But so not really a vision other than to share the stories honestly, authentically, cleanly, and with as much empathy as we possibly can for these people. You know, even people in a dysfunctional relationship, you can find something to love and admire, and you can find something to relate to or to feel passion for, to feel compassion for the people in the stories. I don't know how many of them are lovable per se. I think the mother in Avow is very lovable. And so did it turn out to be David, the ghost, the character that I play in Avow. You know, he was in a broken relationship, but he stayed because it's what they knew. And back in that day, people didn't leave. They lived in dysfunctional relationships. They didn't get divorced. They stayed for the kids. They stayed for the wife. And it's what he knew. It was home. He says, "Why did I stay? She was home. It wasn't perfect, but it's what we knew." So that's an older school of thought now. People now make changes. Society has allowed us to come to a place where getting a divorce isn't what it used to be. People do it. People can move on. People can find happiness. And if the relationship isn't bringing you happiness, I think data, research, time, reflection has shown that the kids are probably going to be better off if you separate than if you stay together in an unhappy house.
Yes, sir.
An unhappy house will breed, if not totally unhappy children, children that will struggle with their own relationships, as we see this young man doing, football son, on his wedding day.
Yes, sir. Well, for kind of my final question, this is something outside of, I guess, even all of the University of Alabama Opera Theater. It's just for, I think, all opera performers in the future. How do you think that the pandemic will affect, like, the future of opera performance? Because obviously it's been such a struggle for especially musicians and live performers.
That's a very good question. I don't think anybody has a crystal ball. First, they need to open up again and start producing seasons. The object will be to get audiences back. What are audiences going to want to come back to? Are audiences going to feel safe? Are we going to have to open up slowly and have social distance? Probably, although nobody really knows. Before this pandemic hit, new music, new opera, new works for the American stage were everything, were all the rage. Young composers were making a living, and there were so many works in the pipeline. Will that continue, or will we return to more standard fare to attract the diehard aficionado? We don't know. Nobody knows. You know, we're talking about the economy. We're talking about filling seats. We're talking about being able to afford to produce works. What type of rehearsal environment will it be safe to return to? I mean, you know, so it's almost an impossible question to answer. All I can tell you is what I know many of us hope for, and that we go back to quote-unquote normal. But there's no turning back in this. There isn't, even in our personal lives, in our lives of being human beings, normal is gone. There's only going to be new normal, and things we'll always have to get used to. I think masks are with us for a while, as they should be. I think social distancing is with us for a while. You know, we can be scientists and say once 83.5% of people over the age of 16 are vaccinated, we'll be okay, but that's a long way off. We're still fighting politics, where half of the country still doesn't want to get vaccinated, so that will affect the rest of us, right? Yes. And it will affect how we pack people into theaters, what kind of repertoire we're offering them to attract them in. If we're going to ask you to come to our theater, we better be offering you something that you like, and not maybe, so maybe new music will be on the back burner for a little while. I don't know. I hope not. I don't know. New works are often less expensive to produce because they're sometimes shorter. Chamber operas are becoming very popular. Hour and 20 minute works. They're a heck of a lot cheaper to produce than a La Boheme or a Butterfly or a Magic Flute, perhaps. So the answer is, we don't know. Nobody knows. All I can tell you is what we hope for. Yes. And we hope to, because opera, theater, live performances have such a soothing role in our communities, we hope to be able to get back to offering that simply as a means to help, you know, let alone to educate or to offer opportunities and all that. But it depends on so many things, the economy and safety and health. But what's, let's say, 2 years down the line when things are new, I still think this technology, I still think a certain amount of live streaming will be with us for a long time. We're learning how to monetize that. How, you know, if you want to come live, it's X amount of dollars. But if you want to do the live stream, it's going to be X amount of dollars. Mm-hmm. If you want it to be available afterwards, X amount of dollars. Everything will be monetized. Whereas now people are offering a lot of free historic performances, the Met, etc. But going forward, I think that we will find a way to capitalize on this technology as we've learned about live streaming. And I think that the things that we're learning about green screen technology and filming and making opera movies and that sort of thing and working without an audience, I think that's going to go away. But I think we'll slowly merge the old normal into a new normal, and the technology and the way that we can offer stories, opera on film, opera recorded. I'm going to Virginia in a month to make a recording of an opera that will be ultimately edited and acted by actors and puppets, actors. So I don't know why I said puppets, but I had that image of that in my head. It'll be acted with live actors while the singing is in the recording.
Okay.
So I don't think we'll lose any of it. I don't think it's going to be we're going to wake up and here's the start of a new opera season, and all of a sudden it's full audiences attending, you know, a Carmen and a Don Pasquale and then a new opera. I think it's going to be a blending of what our new normal is with the good stuff from the past and looking to a future that indefinitely embraces a lot of technology.
Yes, sir.
So I think a lot of that is not going to go away, and I think it's going to be a very slow evolution into a new world of live theater. And I think that's going to take probably 2 more years.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, Labor Day is not going to come this year. Woo! No one has a mask on, and we're elbow to elbow, and we're hugging everybody. No. There will be some of that in certain states, perhaps. But I think we still, even though we're artists, we still have to follow the science.
Yes, sir.
And the data. And that means the vaccines, what's healthy, what's healthy for our civilization, for our populace. And then art will follow along and adjust as it always does. So there's my answer to that.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.